Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
I'm Jackie Cation, and you're listening to The Dork Forest. You've done it. You've chosen wisely. The website's jackiecation.com, dorkforest.com, thedorkforest.com. Jackiecation.com has everything, right? This podcast, links to my other podcast, links to my calendar for when stand-up comedy happens again, links to the merch if you want a Ranger of the Dork Forest t-shirt. If you want any of my stand-up merchandise, there's a bunch of new merch over there. There's the old pins. There's a new challenge coin. There's a bunch of t-shirts. There's CDs. There's my DVD. And there's some video. And there's more of the information that you could deal with. Also, so that's on JackieCation.com. And there's a link on, of course, dorkforest.com to the merch page. The other thing you could do is you go to iTunes and review the show. That's always something that's supposed to help. Hi. You might be listening to the show on Pandora or Spotify or Amazon or Stitcher or some other place. Anyway, you might be just listening to it at dorkforest.com, which will also have the videos. As long as we're in COVID, as long as we're in quarantine, I am doing Zoom. I'm doing this show as also a video show. So you can go to the YouTube page and get a bunch of that. That also has a bunch of my stand-up clips on it as well. Let's do the credits. Hey, Mike Rickberg wrote and composed that song that you just heard, and he sang it with his wife, Sarah. He will sing at the end of the program his words to the Mexican Hat Dance. Very glamorous. Patrick Brady fixes the audio, the video. He does everything, and he really kind of keeps me sane. Loving Patrick Brady, especially in these days. And then Vilmos keeps JackieCation.com rocking and rolling, as the kids say. There are several ways to support the show. I've already mentioned reviewing the show on iTunes. You could also just tell people that you love the show. That's always something. You could repost it if it's a particular episode you enjoy. You could join the Ranger page on Facebook if you like. That's just a bunch of people who love the show, and they can riff on each other and talk about the show and dorky things that they love themselves. My Twitter, Instagram, and all things Snapchat at Jackie Cation. If you ever want to get in touch with me, it's Jackie at JackieCation.com. That's my email address. And if you want to donate, you can just give me money, quite honestly. You can PayPal me, Jackie at JackieCation.com, or use the button on JackieCation.com or DorkForest.com, and it comes directly to me. I will use it, in this case, enormously wisely on things like shelter and food until I'm on the road again. And then, and I appreciate whatever you could send. If you want to make it monthly, if you do monthly things, you can make the PayPal thing monthly. You can also, if you don't like PayPal, you could pay me by Venmo. My Venmo is just my name, Jackie-Cation, and then a picture of me windswept, I believe. Other than that, Bandcamp. If you've run out of episodes to watch and would like more, there are live episodes on dorkforest.bandcamp.com. And there's a bunch of episodes. There's 200 episodes before I started pre-recording. The best 17 of the horrible audio that they were are on Bandcamp. So you can listen to those for free. There's a bunch of live ones that are like $2 a piece because they cost me some money to produce. So I charge you a couple of bucks. There's also a storytelling album if you like that. So much info. Let's get into the show. Hi, I'm Jackie Cation. I'm in my garage again, and this time with a New York comic that I don't know, but I'm excited to meet you, Kevin James Doyle. Welcome to the Dork Forest.
Hi, Jackie. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. Sure. It's now the Dork Forest is now. Here's the thing about Kevin James Doyle. You should know that he has a new album out, and it's called 30-Year-Old Virgin. So check that out. And you have your own podcast, which is the Bradshaw Boys.
Yes.
Where you discuss Sex in the City?
Yes. We're three guys who are watching Sex in the City for the first time ever. So,
and it's better you than me, my friend. Good for you.
It's been quite a journey.
How many episodes of the show? Like how many? What are there?
There are, well, the season finale is split into, the series finale is split into two episodes, and those are our next two episodes. So by the time this interview comes out.
Oh, so you guys are cruising.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. By the time this comes out, we will have finished the entire series. And we've had on almost most of the cast. We've had on Sarah Jessica Parker and Kristen Davis.
That's because you live in New York and you get to have people.
Exactly.
Are you going to do Gilmore Girls next? What are you guys going to do next?
No, you know, we're going to, I think we're going to like do some shows. We're going to do not entire series, but I think we're going to do like, we're going to dip in on different ones.
You should do Deadwood.
Oh, I love Deadwood.
Did you ever see Deadwood?
Oh, yes.
Oh, you saw it already. Okay. Yeah.
But we want to do Golden Girls because
It's,
you know, and then we're going to do some other shows, but we're also, people love Sex and the City so much. We're going to go back and rewatch and try and get our listeners involved a little more. Because
nice.
Yeah. So there's, you know, we're just going to start it over from scratch. Like most people do with their favorite show.
I wrote a review of Sex and the City, the second movie. That I saw, and I insist that I saw it by accident. And because you know how there's always that thing you can relate to one of the characters?
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out in Sex and the City 2, the character I most relate to is the Arab guy that tries to get Samantha arrested for giving someone fellatio in a public restaurant. I'm like, yeah, put him. I'm on his side. That's the character I identify. Anyway, so not a huge fan of Sharia law, but that just seems common decency. I'm not saying anything. Did you see the movies?
We're gonna do the movies, and I've heard that Sex and the City 2 is among one of the worst movies ever made. So.
Ever made. And not in a funny way.
Yeah.
Bit of a pity that. I don't know if you ever saw Overboard, but that is a terrible movie that I thoroughly love.
Yeah.
So, it's Goldie Hawn. And
so many people are messaging us being like, hey, already pre-apologizing as fans, being like, don't be too hard on Sex and the City 2. Just stop it. Like people like collectively across the world are like, we know. We apologize.
We know. Right. We liked the show. The show was great.
Yeah.
And the show did have a lot of potential to do some good stuff in the beginning, right? And then, not that we're here to talk about Sex and the City. You guys, go to the Bradshaw Boys and hear you. All your Sex and the City needs will be fulfilled.
Yes.
I promise you. Kevin James Doyle. And if you go at Kevin James Doyle on Twitter and Instagram and all the things, you'll be able to follow him on all that. And the new album is called 30-Year-Old Virgin. And we'll leave that as a mystery because this makes me laugh because you wanted to talk about music and Rangers of the Dork Forest know that I don't know anything enough about any kind of music. So you're going to have to start at the beginning because you've picked somebody that I have one Christmas song that I've heard of this guy.
Okay. A Christmas Card from a Hooker in.
Yes.
Okay.
That's the one. The Minneapolis one?
Yes.
Is that set in Minneapolis? Yes. That's why I've heard it. Is he still alive? Tom Waits?
Okay.
Is he still here?
This is such a great, an hour before I was just like, what if I forget everything that has ever been happened? You know, like you think, and now I'm just so excited to share this person with you. So I was playing video games when I was like 14, I was playing like Madden 1998 or something. And then
good for you for playing it. Not as a button masher. Go.
And
yes,
when I turned it off, Letterman was on, it was late. And there was just a Cookie Monster guy like screaming into a microphone. And I just remember pre-internet, I saw that. And then they went to commercial and I never got the person's name. And it wasn't until like 5 years later that I heard the voice again. And I found out it was Tom Waits. So I went to the local record store and just like literally the world opened up to me because he has had so many albums out by that point. So his career, I'll start with his like career with the album you're talking about, which is like he was kind of like a lounge singer and he was kind of just like weird.
Wait, Tom Waits of the Gravel Voice was a lounge singer?
Kind of like drunken lounge singer. Think that. Just like, okay. Hey, how you doing?
Like the Pogues? Like the Pogues.
Yeah, I don't know. It would be like,
that's more pub music, maybe.
Yeah, it was just like drunken piano ballads. And he's
okay.
Just, and he has like the best origin story ever because he got pretty popular at that point. Like he had a few songs that were mini hits and Bruce Springsteen covered one of his songs. And then he's like hammered all the time. He's, you know, doing drugs, pretty strung out. Then he meets this woman, his wife, Kathleen Brennan, on the set.
Aww.
Of Francis Ford Coppola movie that he was doing music for and she was doing some rewrites for. It's called One from the Heart.
Okay.
And
okay.
She basically is like they fall deeply in love. They get married. She gets him sober. And his music went fucking bonkers after that. Like, he got sober and then his music just turned into the most insane, unusual stuff ever. So I just love that, like, he got sober and fell in love and became a family man. And then his art went off the cliff of into crazy town. And it's like the coolest. His music gets so weird after that. So then he kind of put the piano away and started like literally like playing with like trash in a room and beatboxing and crazy, crazy stuff. So.
Okay. Wow. Okay. So while you told me that fascinating story, I Googled two things.
Yeah.
One from the Heart was a movie that came out in 1981.
Mm-hmm.
And he was already very successful if he's writing the soundtrack to a film.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So he must have been around before 1981 doing music.
Yes. So.
Okay.
Closing Time was probably 1975. And that's kind of, that's his first album. And it's like, I think Capitol Records. And it's like him, like pretty poppy music. I mean, poppy, poppy by his standards, like. It, you still listen to it. When you look on Spotify, it's still his first single from his first album that is still his most listened to song. And it's called, and it's just like, well, I hope that I don't fall in love with you. Like, it's got like, it's like kind of hipper, Jim Croce-ish, not that kind of like normal sounding pop music. Just, like,
Right. Just sort of a ballad.
Yeah.
Just ballad stuff. Okay. Yeah. All right. And now, and in 1980, he was 30 years old.
Oh my gosh.
That's the other thing that we know. Yeah. Because he is 70 years old at this time, according to Wikipedia.
I don't know if you do this, but whenever I compare ages of what people did at what time, like it, I always immediately am like, what? Am I as successful as Tom Waits at 30? Obviously not, but I like, you find out like,
wow, that's going to beat you up forever.
I know.
If you keep doing that. Cause I don't think you're much older than that. Right.
No.
Isn't your album called 30 Year Old Virgin?
Yeah.
And
exactly.
That's hilarious. I don't recommend that. Especially since he was such a mess when he was 25.
Yeah, exactly.
So his
career, a lot, like some of his most successful songs now are from that pre era. Like when you look at numbers, when you look at strict numbers, it's like he has a song called The Piano Has Been Drinking that's like still pretty popular. And he has a lot of like, you know, kind of like, just
those anthems for young men kind of thing.
There's
like Hunter S. Thompson,
totally.
David Foster Wallace. I'm going to be an emo dude over in the corner, but I'm also incredibly, you know, artistic but I'm also hammered and drugged up.
Yes.
So
and very like, I think he dug into being like, you know what it is to be if I play piano, like I have to be drunk or else is it even art?
Right. It's everyone falling in love with, they're like, well, maybe if I got drunk, I could, or if I did drugs, I might be this amazing. But then you just said in 1981 or so, he sobers up and his career changes diametrically or?
Yes. So he comes out with this album called Swordfish Trombones, which I still like his older albums before that, but like, but Swordfish Trombones is like, people were so confused. They were like, what is this? There was still some piano stuff going on, but like weird, you know, marimba.
Marimba.
Yeah. There's like marimba on there and there's like really weird percussion things. And then most of all, before a lot of that, he would sing like, I don't know. He'd sing kind of like this, like how you do. And then his voice like literally becomes Cookie Monster times 10. Like he starts doing insane stuff with his voice that is just like, that it sounds like it turns off so many people. You're either like with him at that point or you're not. And like the next 30 years, like he doesn't do any favors for people that need a pretty voice. He's like,
oh, okay. So that isn't his voice, the one that he's singing sometimes?
He has like, he even talks about it at length in some interviews, but he's like, I thought I had one voice, but he's like, I think my voice is just like, you can play a song 50 different ways. He's like, every single song that I have calls for a different voice.
Okay.
And so there's like beautiful little songs that he has. He has a quote where he says he writes Grand Weepers, sad songs, and Grim Reapers.
Yeah.
So he has songs.
Okay.
He has songs that are called like Misery's the River of the World. And then he has like a song that's called like You Can Never Hold Back Spring. And they're like these like beautiful little songs. And
so
then
he's,
these other
he's
ones.
Like a cool version of Harry Chapin.
Absolutely.
I don't know if you've ever heard any.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah,
he's like,
totally.
Yeah. It's like a cool, I don't know.
Yeah.
I used to love Harry Chapin when I was in college back in the 12th century. and it was sort of that. He had this song, Harry Chapin had a song about a baby dying, a newborn. And then he also had this song about, you know, man, you're doing it. You're keep going.
He's like,
I wish
right.
I actually, I think he only had, that's actually not true. I don't think he had a spring song. I can't remember because I can only remember Taxi and Cats in the Cradle. And
Cats in the Cradle is one of those songs that, yeah, like you're just like humming along and then you listen to the lyrics and you're just like, oh my gosh. It's like tragic.
Yeah. It's tragic, and you're just like, dude, just call your dad. It's
exactly.
He did the best he could. He's probably an idiot.
Yeah, you just got to forgive him. Sort of, get a coffee. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of – so Swordfish, like what are the – I wonder what the – so in 1983, he releases this Swordfish of Trombones.
Yes, and that is kind of – He got a new record label. He left his record label so he could have complete artistic. And also his wife, actually, from this point on, he credits every single song that he writes with his wife. Everything's co-credited. So from the second he met his wife, everything is written by Tom Waits and Kathleen Brennan. And he has lots of quotes about it. He says, like, people are like, what's your process? And he's like, I wash the dishes and she dries them. Like, he basically, like, he finds this artistic soulmate. And he has another beautiful quote where he says, like, even if she didn't work on the song with me, she inspired it. And so she is part of every part of his process. And Swordfish Trombones is the first version of that. That's their first collaboration. That's his first time on this new label. And he kind of finds his footing. And then his probably like artistic masterpiece is the album that came out after that, which is called Rain Dogs.
Rain Dogs.
Yes.
Okay.
And by this point, I was born. This is when I was born. When I found out this is the year I was born, I was like, I like kind of attached myself to that album. I was like, this means something.
I love, you're great. you're just like, no, man, it's gotta be about me. I don't think you get it.
Yes.
Anyway, but I mean, cause it's like, it's what we all do, but yours is such, it comes from such a sweet place where you're like, no, this must mean something, right? I mean, I'm right here and it's awesome. So Rain Dogs, is it good?
Yes, it is like the least. In the only thing cohesive about the album is like him, because it is like the weirdest sounds. Like every song is a new weird adventure. It's about crazy characters, about like weird, dark, seedy things, and then just the weirdest noises. He started working with this one guitarist named Mark Ribot, and like he does all these like weird sounds with the guitar, and they have weird instruments. And it sounds like it sounds like he's in like a junkyard banging on things and growling. And then you also could like tear up at like a lyric.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I kind of, I mean, that's what I've, I know that the one song that I know, which is that Christmas song, the lyrics are beautiful.
Yeah.
He's just, he seems incredibly poetic and really it's, yeah.
Well, there's something so like masculine and like intense about his energy, because he's very like if anyone hasn't heard his music, which a lot of people haven't, but it's like he sounds like he's like, every time I go like, and so there'll be a song like that, and then he has a lyric called no one puts flowers on a flower's grave, and it's just like you're just like, how does this dude, how does,
yeah,
what, he just like is so in touch with like, his emotions, and then also just like, you just don't hear that coming out of that voice.
Right, that voice and those words.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you think about it, some of the most McGruff the Crime Dog dudes you know are like, oh, here's a flower.
Exactly.
And so, I mean, it's almost like being that tough, you can sort of lap yourself.
Yeah.
And be okay with the emotion. Because he's 70. I mean, it's not like it was encouraged in 1965 to be a 10-year-old with aware of your own, you know, emotions.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, totally. I think like, and I do think there's something that's cool that getting rid of the dumb destroying your life poetry that is like, you know, you don't need to destroy yourself to be interesting. You know, like you don't have to, you can actually have a stable marriage and you can sing super weird and you don't need to,
yeah.
You can remember last night. That has nothing to do with whether your music is good.
Right. It's one of the great fears and one of the great myths, you know, the Hemingway kind of Hunter S. Thompson.
Totally.
Where there has to be mental imbalance. There has to be drug and alcohol use. There has to be all of this, you know, violence or some damn thing. You have to be broken in some way to create this art.
Yeah. And even I think I'm a big Beatles fan, but everybody loves to, and it's just because they're more popular, but everyone loves to be like, this is when they did acid. This is like when you can hear like they started smoking weed on like during these albums, and you can hear that with a lot of 60s music. And
yeah.
I think there's still like, there's like a weird, everyone gets so thrilled about like, then they did drugs, then they went nuts. Then, and same with like lots of musicians.
Right.
And this is the, for me, it was super influential, and like I don't get into drugs and stuff, but just to hear like an artistic opposite story of that, that it's like this dude literally became the most vanilla life and his art went insane,
off the rails.
It's so great.
Yeah. And well, it's such a great fear of any, you know, I mean, I think about Hedberg, you know, Mitch Hedberg, and how great he could have been if he had sobered up, if he had gotten clean. And you know, and that's true, but it's the great fear is that you're going to lose this weird artistic edge when in reality, no, it turns out your work ethic goes up quite a bit if you're not hungover all the time.
Yeah.
And you can get some shit done. So
And if you're not dead, like it bums me out whenever people die and you're just like, you know, like even Prince and Tom Petty, I don't think people since they were already like towards the end of their career, they didn't totally, like society, it doesn't seem like totally reckoned with the fact that it's like they died of drug overdoses. Like we should have five more albums from Tom Petty and five more albums from Prince. And they weren't 25, so it doesn't feel as tragic, but it's like, no, they died of drug overdoses and that sucks. Like Prince should be around right now, you know? So,
So Tom Waits is.
Tom Waits is
going to die in his bed with his shoes off, surrounded by loved ones. It's going to be great.
Exactly. So, okay. So, Rain Dogs is masterpiece album. If anybody out there wants to get into Tom Waits, you start with the early stuff. That is like, that's your light drugs. And then once you do Rain Dogs, that's your hardcore art drugs for Tom Waits.
Okay.
That's the pure stuff.
Right.
And then one cool thing about that was I bought Rain Dogs because that's what someone told me. They're like, you got to buy this album. And I listened to it and I gave it to my friend. I was like, this sucks. This is the worst thing I've ever heard in my life. And this is after I was already a fan of his earlier stuff.
Right. You were right.
I went to Circuit City, RIP, and I got I got Rain Dogs.
Speaking of losing it all because of drugs, fucking Circuit City, man. Good
Come
Lord.
On. And Best Buy, they actually, you know, they stuck around. They were nice. They
Best Buy was the
kept
pimp,
their shit
man.
Together.
Best Buy was the one. He was the one. Hey, Circuit City, you ever tried this?
Exactly.
Look at this adapter.
Yeah.
Anyway, so bad. Go ahead.
Neither of them were ever as bad as Radio Shack. Which holds
both Best Buy and Radio Shack are like by the skin of their teeth, they're holding on. Hilarious.
So I got that album and I was just, I listened to it once and I was like, what is, brain couldn't compute. I gave it to my friend And then he had it. About 6 months later, he gave it back to me. And he's like, I don't want it either. I'm going to throw it away. I was like, well, don't throw it away. He gave it back to me after 6 months. I gave it another shot, probably out of some like, I know I'm supposed to like this because cool people said I should.
Right.
And it totally clicked. Like I fell.
It clicked.
I fell in love. I totally understood it. I totally wasn't bothered by the voice anymore because it is like really aggressive. Like I can't play him around my mom or else she was like, why? I just don't get it. Why? Why?
it's just real. Is it just loud and a lot of is it drum? Is it percussive?
It's mostly just his voice. It's like, it's everything about it is weird. But if he was just singing over top in a normal way, but like, he's just barking like a dog, or he's like, even a ballad, he's like, everybody listen to her. Like, it is very just like, you're concerned for him. You're like, stop smoking. And he's like, I did.
Right. Okay. Do you need some tea?
Yeah.
Do you have, did you listen to it start to finish? Did you just go, I'm like we're all told to listen to albums?
Yes. And I still am kind of addicted to that. Like, it's still hard for me to not listen to albums all the way through. But I specifically remember starting it, going to the end, and listening to it all the way through 3 times.
Okay.
So just sitting in my room 3 times in a row, just...
Yeah.
World opening up before my eyes, you know, like as like,
and this is 1985. So like, he's still writing and producing music?
Oh yeah. Yeah. So he, since then he came out with an album that was even weirder, that won a Grammy and more people. And then Keith Richards found out about him, who's the Rolling Stones guitarist. And
yeah,
Keith Richards is like a huge fan. Keith Richards is like Tom. Okay. Waits. So he's the type of guy that has like, famous people more successful than him are like, you are the guy, you know?
Yeah, so right.
He probably has 10 or 15 albums since Rain Dogs.
Okay. 10 or 15. Well, that makes sense. 85.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been 35 years. So he could do, so that's an album.
Yeah.
That's a lot of albums.
Last album before, like 2 albums ago, he never played piano. And it was almost like, I would say that this was like the full, the climax of his like weird origin. Like he gave up playing piano at all. Like this is the first time he didn't have that. And he started beatboxing. His son got into rap music and he started playing rap music and Tom Waits is like, whoa, this is crazy. And so he beatboxed on like half the album. And I know it's like, it's not him being like, my name's Tom Waits and what's up? Like, it's his version. Right. But one thing that I thought was
just
cool.
Just more spoken word, I bet.
It's like him being like, a boom, boom, ka, a boom, boom, ka. And...
Okay.
And
what?
And so when he found out about sampling, I feel like this is kind of his like goes into his psyche. When he found out about sampling, he was like, no, he's like, you can't sample it. He's like, because then it's the same noise for 5 minutes. So he's like, it's like 5 seconds and then repeated. So all the songs that he beatbox on, he does the full beatbox for like 6 minutes. And he's like, he's kind of obsessed with like the human like flaws and errors. He's like, I don't want every beat to sound the same. Like I want my voice to get tired and I want every boom, boom chick to feel different throughout the whole song. And what's funny is like, it's just him being obsessed with, it's funny when you hear it, that it's like his son listened to rap music. And then as a dad, I bet his son was just like, Dad, oh my gosh, what a dork. You know, like this is what he took away from listening to cool rap music is like beatboxing in his garage.
No, you're ruining it, Dad. That's not, I got to go buy pants that are too big for me.
Yeah,
I'll be right back.
Exactly.
And,
so,
oh my God, that's so funny.
Yeah. And he hasn't done anything. He hasn't released anything for 10 years now. And I have a friend who is friends with his son on Facebook and told me that sometimes in their Facebook feed, they'll just have a picture of like a family picture at the beach. And in the back is just like Tom Waits in the back. So I'm like, that's the only piece of like what he's been up to that I've heard for like 10 years that like, I'm like, all right, I guess he's just hanging out with his family.
So not playing, just kind of literally living his life.
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting.
The very last concert that he played in the United States, I was at. And he's
okay.
He's only played probably about 100 shows in the past like 20, 25 years. He just does not play live that often. And
when did you first see him?
I first saw him in 2006, and I saw him in Chicago. I got tickets and drove out to Chicago to see him. I lived in Columbus.
From
at
where?
The time. From Columbus.
Oh my gosh! Oh, that's not as bad. Okay.
It's not. Yeah. So then, and it was great. It was awesome. And any Tom Waits fan is just like, you saw him, because like no one, very few people has seen him because he plays very well.
And then, he doesn't, what kind of vent does he play, auditoriums or stadiums, or does he do it like that? Or
he plays really old, beautiful theaters, you know, so it'll be like a 2,000 seat. Like I saw him at the Chicago Theater, which is like 3,000 seats.
Yeah. And just one of those old Fox theaters. Yeah.
Yeah. So I saw him a few years later in Columbus, and I was like, this is like, and he came to my hometown. I got one ticket. And then my dad got another ticket because they sold out in like Ticketmaster, like you pressed a button and then we're in a queue. And then 30 minutes later, they're like, you can get one seat in the back of whatever. So after the show, I was like on cloud nine and I talked to someone at the show because I bought tickets like the day they came out. I talked to someone at the show that there was like an extra release of tickets. And they're like, I got my ticket like 2 weeks ago. So I went home on Ticketmaster and I woke up the next morning. I was like, I'll see. And there was tickets in Atlanta for like 5 days from then. I got online. I just put two tickets in. I pressed enter. And that Saturday, like 5 days later, two second row tickets came up. And
what?
I flipped out. People offered me for my tickets in Columbus $1,200 cash. They were just like,
right.
Like I could have sold both of those tickets for $3,000 a piece, probably. Like it.
Yeah. Yeah, and something crazy.
Yeah, so I bought them, and then my dad came home, and I was like, we have to go to Atlanta on Saturday. And he was like, why? And I was like, I got Tom Waits tickets. And he's like, what? So
that's cool.
Yeah, so we hopped in, and then, so it was the best show. I quit seeing concerts for probably 5 years after that. It like ruined live. I was just like, it was the greatest thing I'd ever seen. He's very funny performer. He kind of like half 30 minutes of the show, he just like tells weird made up funny stories. So he has like a weird,
that's cool.
Yeah, like if you look at his old Letterman appearances, it's like he's kind of like a comic, you know, like he's doing jokes and doing weird, like doing funny panel things and like riffing with David Letterman. So he has like this performer vibe of like, and he has like weird one-liners and stuff. and I saw that. And then NPR released that concert like a few months later. They were like, here's a live audio of this show that Tom Waits did in Atlanta. So I have like NPR released this like 2.5 hour show that I was at in like perfect audio. So I get to like relive it occasionally, which is fun.
And that was like 2009.
Yeah, that was 2008. It was the month before I moved to New York City. It was July of 2008.
Okay.
And then I moved to New York like a month later.
Okay. So, wow. So you, okay. Have you seen him since?
That's the last show he's played in the United States. So he hasn't played a single show. He hasn't played a single concert since
then.
But
you've seen him three times.
Yes. And I've seen like 60-year-old dudes with Tom Waits shirts on. And I'm like, did you ever see him? They're like, no, that's my dream. And I was like, if I tell them I've seen him three times, they're just like, they're like, don't want to talk to me anymore. They're like, I hate you.
Yeah, yeah. It's why. Yeah. But it's almost like you kind of just want to say you're right to want to see them.
Yes.
Because it is really cool.
Yeah.
But it feels like you're sort of rubbing it in their face. And you're like, no, I don't want to be a dick, but I just want to tell you that you're right. It's a really cool show. So.
Yeah. And also I have like kind of, I get kind of like a bone to pick with people that don't see live stuff, because all I've done is gotten on Ticketmaster and pressed enter. And I can understand like not, but it's like, if you have some amount, unless it's like cost prohibitive, it's yeah. sort of like with any live things. I'm like, whenever people are like, oh, you got to go.
Right. Right. You got to go. And it's interesting because it's almost like if, yeah, so like I wanted to see Hamilton, mm-hmm. but it was cost prohibitive.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it. And so it took a couple of years, and then I saw it, then I saw it again, and I was very pleased. But it would be weird if I were to be mad that someone saw a show of something that I was unwilling to put the effort into going
yeah.
to. Like, I'm not a big live music person.
Yeah.
I like listening to music on CDs and digital, you know, I just like to listen to music. Yeah. I don't necessarily need to have my hearing destroyed.
But do you, I mean,
in the event.
As, I mean, you're a live comedian performer, and it's sometimes mm-hmm. it feels like pulling teeth. Like, you kind of have to put the work in to get people to come out to enjoy live things, like, because it is so much easier to sit at home and be like, watch TV. But it's like, there's yeah. not a single television show or movie that I experience in the way I have anything live. But it's like, it's, I don't know. Like, I remember that show and a few other times, like, I go back to that in my brain all the time, because I'll never be able to do that again. And I don't know. There's just like, I could yell forever about how important it is to get, like, it's great that you went and see Hamilton. I still talk to people that are still just like, oh man, I would love to see that. Or like, how'd you get tickets? And it's like, well, I mean, I bought them. I don't know. Like,
yeah. Yeah. I saved up. I bought some tickets. It was weird
yeah.
to spend a lot of money on something, but I was psyched when I saw it. And then when the original cast came out on Disney Plus, I mean, now everybody can see it, and they did an amazing job with it, quite yeah. honestly,
I don't want to make you jealous, but I saw Hamilton, the night I just did what you're saying. I just was like, put it on a credit card. I was like, whatever. And I went that night with the original cast, and that night they came out and bowed. And then they were like, we just found out Lin-Manuel won the Pulitzer. So it was like, and everyone like started cheering and was like, you know, and then tickets were probably $400, which was like, you know, pretty tough. But the next day yeah. tickets from then on for like a year were cheapest ones you could get were like $800. And I was like,
right. It was, no. It was $800 to $1,200 plus a flight to New York and a hotel. Ooh. So I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And then, but I have to say that, I saw it, and it was, but I have friends who saw it at the Public before it went to Broadway
mm-hmm.
and saw it multiple times at the Public, multiple times on Broadway before it blew up.
Oh.
And then with each of the new casts, and then I saw it with the LA cast, and then I went and I saw it with the new New York cast.
Okay.
And so those are the two times I've seen that, and that's kind of amazing. But, what I'm looking at here, first of all, what I usually do with musical episodes
is
like to ask people to do like a Spotify list of like 8 songs.
100%. 100%.
100%? Okay, because if you're willing to do that and then send me a link to that, I'll listen to it.
I absolutely.
And it might be a nice arc of.
Yes.
It's just a taste of what I'm missing by not.
Yes.
Having listened to a lot of Tom Waits.
I did think about that. I was like, oh man, it's tough to talk about music, but I was like, this is maybe I can turn on one person to become a Tom Waits head. But yeah, no.
Right.
What's cool with the playlist like this is like there really is so like every album that he has is different. He has like a and there's just like so many different flavors. So I'll make the greatest 8 song playlist of Tom Waits that.
And just know that my favorite like my favorite sort of sad sack folk song kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Is like, I'm willing to listen to heavy metal ballads. You know, those are the ones I like the best. The Amy Mann, you know, sort of acoustic-y kind of stuff. I like that. So if you've got, you know, if you've got an idea there,
I have a huge, you're going to love this. So just recently, I think like 2 weeks ago or maybe a month or so, Tom Waits, there was an album of women covering Tom Waits just got released and Amy Mann is on there.
Oh, okay.
Amy Mann's on there singing my favorite song by Tom Waits. And it's like, and
what's your favorite song by Tom Waits?
My favorite song by Tom Waits is called Hold On. And it's just, it's like of all the poetry, like he talks a bunch. If you want to be inspired artistically, like he has some really beautiful talking about songwriting and how like you don't write a song, you just find it. And he's like, it's like farming, and he's like, you just water things. And sometimes like all the stuff that I think like as a comedian or writer, you're sort of like, it's very inspiring, even though I'm not a musician. And he has like his most beautiful song of all his weird poetry songs. The chorus is just hold on. You got to hold on. And like, that's it. And I hear it and he sings it. And I'm like, he's so wordy. And then that, and Amy Mann singing it. Oh, I cry. You're going to cry listening
to it. Oh, that's
awesome.
So I'm going to cry for sure. Yeah.
Amy Mann is on that album. So is Phoebe Bridgers. Do you know Phoebe Bridgers?
I don't.
She's awesome. And and Patty Griffin, Roseanne Cash. And so what's cool about his cover albums, or anytime people cover him, is like it's similar to, you know, Bob Dylan, in that like for the people that can't handle the voice, then all of a sudden it's like, I love when people cover Tom Waits, because I'm like, I get why his voice is prohibitive for people. I totally understand. Like, I don't want to force him on anyone, but if you get it, you get it. But whenever someone covers his songs and like, and they can be like, hear the beauty of his songwriting without it sounding like it's like sung by like a monster, you know?
Exactly. So why people like covers is a real, I mean, that's a real issue with Bob Dylan for me too, is that I think that the music is nice. I like the song. And take a stand here. Bob Dylan's real good, you guys.
Yeah.
Anyway, but with, I mean, but the music is good, but, and the lyrics are beautiful, but his voice is sometimes prohibitive and I can't understand the words.
Yeah.
Because he's growling them or he's just kind of mumbling and I'm just like, come on, man.
I know there's,
you took the time to write the song.
There's something.
It's like when Maria Bamford whispers a punchline. I'm like, fucking enunciate.
You're like, come on.
And so,
no, there's, I think there's something, I went to school for musical theater. And I really, really like a lot of musicals. I love a lot of musicals, but it was interesting. I was getting into Tom Waits and Bob Dylan when I was going to school and there for singing. And I really, really have a major, I was on some, doing some rant with my friend the other day, ripping on this very thing, but it's like how they want the voices to be so pretty on Broadway and they actually weren't all pretty. Like they weren't like, what's her name? Who's in Sunday in the Park with George, Steve Martin, the jerk, Bernadette Peters.
Bernadette Peters. There you go.
No one, listen,
thank God.
No one, most of all me, thought we were going to be talking about Bernadette Peters, but we're in the forest, but her voice is not traditionally pretty. Like it is not like there's jarring aspects to her voice. And in, and I feel like the thing with Bob Dylan, the thing with Tom Waits, like, I love that it's like singing should not be prohibitive. If you can hit the note, then it's like how the human voice isn't meant to sound exactly the same. Like it's the greatest instrument in all of the world. And then you go to school for people to be like, I get it for opera. Like you have to learn how to sing opera, but for theater music, your voice should be able to do whatever it calls for. And I think a lot of times nowadays people sing very much similar styles And I'm so drawn to the people that have weird voices that, like, Maria Bamford's a great example, obviously. Like, her voice is like a complex
instrument. Right. And she can make it do somersaults. So yeah. It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
It's fun to listen to her. So that's cool. I've just put that Come Up to the House, Women Sing Waits, my Christmas list. There you go. You'll be happy to know. Yeah,
I'm excited for you. I think
that'll,
also.
Yeah, that'll be great.
That's just a fun. It's cool that a person exists that like sings in weird ways. Like, I'm glad there's 80 people that aren't doing it all over the radio. It's just, he's like, seems like, I'm glad there's this one weird person out there doing his thing that doesn't give a fuck. Like,
yeah.
He's, yeah.
He's doing it. I mean, do you feel like he's doing it for himself? And if you like it, you like it. And he, like, it's not that he's not reaching toward the audience. It's just he's reaching for a very specific audience who might enjoy what he wants to genuinely do.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's very inspiring, because I think it's like, it was probably scary. I would imagine, like, when he first was like, I'm going to change my entire sound. Like, I'm always amazed at those people that are like, throw it all away and are like, all right, let's see who comes on this journey with me. And then, you know, it may not be as many people, but they're like true believers in what you're doing and like,
right.
And love it, you know?
And if you, you know, and quite honestly, I mean, this is a perfect example, is stand up and COVID and all of these things, is that if you get to do what you love to do, mm-hmm. you've already won.
Yeah.
You know, so I see that, like, his first album, that Closing Time album, came out in 73. Mm-hmm. And then he put out an album every year until 1978. And then 1980 was Heart Attack and Vine, and 1983 was Swordfish Trombones.
Yeah.
And then they became every 2 years, and then 5 years between Frank's Wild Years and Bone Machine.
Bone Machine is the scariest thing you'll ever hear. Bone Machine's weird.
Really?
Yeah. It's like, it's him going deep into these like dark songwriting places that are just like, that are just not. That are like, I don't know, like he wrote a concept album about this like weird German play where like this guy murders his whole family. And then he also wrote a concept album about Alice in Wonderland. And so like,
okay.
And those, so.
And this is stone cold sober, the Bone Machine.
Yeah. Yeah.
This
exactly.
is 1992.
Yeah. He's like, I've been sober for 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is, I think, this is my projection, but I feel like maybe the downside, or not the downside, but it's like all of those albums, when he's releasing albums once a year, it's, you know, there's a template for what you're writing, which is like, you know, I'm writing the songs that like Louis Armstrong wrote only in my voice. It's like the bar piano. It's basically Piano Man, like sing us a song, you're the Piano Man. That's what a lot of those songs were like. Billy Joel had the radio hit, and his were like the weird offbeat versions of that. A bunch of versions of those songs. And then it's...
Oh, okay.
And so when an album comes out every 5 years, at that point, it's probably because it's like you're exploring new sounds, and you can't just throw stuff out because you're like, I don't know what's working, you know?
Right. The Black Rider. How was that? Do you remember that album?
Yes.
From 93.
And that is also a musical. The Black Rider.
It's a story?
Yes. It is. It's like, what is it? It's like a Faustian story. And it's about a guy who, it's about a guy who wants to like woo his love. And so he like trades to get these like certain arrows to be able to impress her with his archery. But then the person that sold him the arrows put a spell on them that they'll kill his love. So he shoots it and then he kills his love. Mm-hmm.
Oh, good Lord.
And then the show's over.
You're just like, why don't you hit her in the foot?
Yeah.
Anyway, so it's just you're like, no, it's got to be the heart. And then, of course, she dies.
Yeah.
And this feels like the tale of someone who doesn't want to do the work. That's what it feels like.
Hey.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Your Tinder profile is just, it's a little aggressive. That's all I'm saying. How about you tone it down a little bit?
Exactly.
And you go slow. Go slow. You could do it. And so the one after that is Mule Variations.
And that one's beautiful. It's much prettier. It has a few weird songs called Filipino Box Spring Hog is one that's really weird. But then there's some really, really beautiful, like he gets back into some of his piano vibes on that. And that's where that song has my favorite song by him, Hold On, which is, you know,
that's the one.
When he played that live, it was like, you know, when you're at a show, I don't know if you feel this, but it's like with comedy, you're never like, oh man, I hope they do my favorite joke. Oh my gosh, he's doing the joke about it's gotta
hot
be
hot pockets or some damn thing. Yeah.
Exactly. But it's cool with the song that I was like, if he plays Hold On, like I think this will be the greatest moment of my life.
Your fingers were crossed.
Yeah.
For those of you not watching on YouTube, and you're wrong, because you can Kevin James Doyle, by the way, is who I'm talking to, and it's at Kevin James Doyle. Those are all words that we all know how to spell. You can do it, at Kevin James Doyle, and you're like, no,
yeah.
People have trouble. They put an I in Doyle. No, it's a Y, you guys. Anyway, so it's at Kevin James Doyle. 30-Year-Old Virgin is the name of the comedy album, and the Bradshaw Boys Sex in the City podcast is available everywhere that you listen to podcasts. Mm. So, but I interrupted you for some reason to do that little informative fun fact.
I love that. I love that. And yeah. I love that. We have a few minutes left. I want to tell you, can I tell you one cool story about him that I think this is a cool story that I also, I think he doesn't do a lot of interviews. So he's someone that I want to get inside their head. And this to me is like very philosophically cool, but basically he has, legally changed, informed our lives as artistic people because Frito-Lay hired, he has a song called Step Right Up on his early album, Small Change. And Frito-Lay wanted to use that song to sell chips, corn chips.
Yes.
You were all familiar with some Frito-Lay's corn chips, right? Yes. And
yes.
And so they went to license the song. And he was like, no, I don't work for corn chips.
It feels weird. It feels super weird.
Wait, to turn down the Frito-Lay's money?
No. To even have them think that would be something.
Exactly.
Yeah. Just like, we're going to use a Tom Waits song to sell some chips.
Yeah.
Does that bother you? Yeah, it does. Oh, never mind.
All right.
Okay.
So they got a... they got a person that is like an impersonator of him or just like listen to him. And so this commercial came out and he was in an interview and they went to commercial like on the radio. This is the 70s. And they went to commercial and then all of a sudden he heard this not his voice, but like this guy that sounded exactly like him. There was like, step right up, get your Frito-Lays. Oh, chips, blah, blah, blah. And he sued Frito-Lay, and it's the very first, and he won the case, but it was like a very weird case because they didn't use his voice. They didn't use his lyrics. They only used his likeness. And he was like, I'm sure he's softened with time, but like it literally created a new form of like copyright law that is like, they used his likeness. And they showed to the jury, and he even got the guy that was the impersonator. He convinced him by telling him, he was like, man, he's like, you stole my likeness. This is like, I don't want to use my music to sell chips. He's like, I'm pure, you know, artistically pure. And that impersonator spoke on behalf of Tom Waits in the lawsuit against Frito-Lay. And he's like,
oh my God.
He's like, I was a fan of Tom Waits. Like, I shouldn't have done this. Like, I'm sorry. And so he was the first, they created like a portion of law now that is like, you can't steal a person's likeness and profit on it.
That's got to help in your Madden games for the football people.
Yeah.
Because I think that the football guys get a taste of the games now.
Yeah.
Now
yeah.
Because of that. Good for you, Tom Waits.
I know.
All right, man.
I know.
That's outstanding.
I thought that was great. Cause I'm like, man, this is like, I wonder how many people at a certain point you could be like, whatever, it's not that big a deal. But it's like, no, my music means more to me than corn chips. And I love Frito-Lay and I love Tom Waits. But,
well, and that's the crazy thing is because I think there is a Bob Dylan like car ad that uses one of his songs, or I don't know, maybe there's a toupee thing blown in the wind. I'm uncertain. I'm just making things up at this point. But the weird thing is I do think that you know, I know that Jim Gaffigan, for example, mm-hmm. I don't know that this is true, but it's a great, when I saw him, mm-hmm. he did an amazing. I think we're all familiar with the fact that Jim Gaffigan would like to talk about food. He has more food comedy bits than I've ever heard in my whole life.
Exactly.
And he's a delight of a human being. And he had a long bit about McDonald's mm-hmm. and about how much he loves McDonald's and about how people are snobs about McDonald's and they should wrap it up. And that's the gist of the joke. Yeah. And it's got a bunch of punchlines and it's great. So he does this on some televised thing that I saw. I think it was a benefit. At the end of it, the thing is squeaky, 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 squeaky. At the very last second, last line, it's almost as if I could almost see something flick a switch where he was like, oh, Jesus, I bet you McDonald's is going to want me to do ads for them. And so he alludes to the fact that Ronald McDonald is a pedophile. And he got out of that.
that's so, I love that so much because it's like the struggle of like, of course, like we all want money. Like that'd be great to like do a commercial. Yeah. But then I love the people that there's that thing of like rascalness that's like, you know what? I don't want to work for McDonald's. I want to tell jokes. And he, you know?
Well, you know, Maria did those Target ads for Target at Christmas uh-huh. for I think 3 seasons. And eventually she was like, you know, I don't think people should go to Target. But Target was psyched because the ads were so successful
yeah.
that they saw like a spike in people buying. Like, why does Target even advertise? Who's going somewhere else for their shiny plastic
yeah.
crap?
Yeah.
But I mean, but I guess she did something that really improved sales.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're like, come on back. And she's like, okay. And then so she did like two or three seasons of this, holiday seasons. And then she said no. And they got someone to try to do what she did.
What happened?
And what she had been – if you look up the ads, because they're on YouTube, the ads are – she plays herself and a sister.
Okay.
She plays two characters, two sisters. One is – wild and crazy, and the other one is all buttoned up and mm-hmm. super OCD and is making 1,000 things by hand, and they both go to Target and they both love Target for different reasons mm-hmm. and so they split it up to have two actors do that. But the weird thing is if you look at the acting from that first – from her to the new thing, the new actors, the new directors, whoever was doing it didn't really get what Maria was doing.
Mm.
Because if you watch those ads, they're enormously subversive.
Mm-hmm.
You can't – at no time she's like, this is nuts. I know it's nuts, mm-hmm. but I love it so. It's like if she only ate Frito-Lays
yeah,
and
yeah.
ate them all and that was the ad, Frito-Lays might love that and people might buy more Frito-Lays. But if they got someone else who didn't get that eating, it yeah. would just look gross.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And that's what the two people, and it's, I don't know who's, I don't think that's anyone's fault. Was just vision.
It's vision, but it's like, I think this, it's hard to explain, but it's like, that's the difference between like the copycat and like the raw uncut artistry of someone like, and I think that there is something to that, that it's like, you see something that it's like, Tom Waits didn't have to exist. Maria Bamford didn't have to exist. They started to exist. And then it seems regular. Like it seems like, oh yeah. Like you do silly voices. And also like you do this. And then like, I'm not punk rock to the point where I'd be like, oh, like I've done commercials and I would still do commercials, but it is really,
I've done some ads on this very program.
Yeah.
There you go.
But it's cool also when you see the people that it's like, oh yeah. Like Maria Bamford's so brilliant, so good that she can bring something to target that they could never even think of themselves just because of the way her brain works, you know? And then you want to put a dollar amount on it, and it's like, yeah, there is a dollar amount, but it's great. It's cool to see people that can walk away from the dollar amount.
Yes, because and that's what Tom Waits, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he did, or like when, you know, everyone with the Chappelle show, everyone's inspired by, like, how did you do that? And he's like, I just walked away. And it's kind of wild.
Yeah, it is. Well, it feels weird because there's this point where if you're sane enough to know that you have enough money, like it's sort of like when Jeff Bezos's wife, when he got divorced, his wife donated $17 billion because I think she got $35 billion or something in the divorce. Billion. And she was like, I think I can donate a little, like half of this and still be okay.
Yeah.
And that's a real sane kind of, you know, you're like, Jeff Bezos has $1 trillion. There's never going to be a check to check for that guy. You know? I mean, that's.
Yeah. At a certain point you're like, yeah, that's just a different mindset of I wouldn't even know what drives that.
J.K. Rowling. J.K. Rowling, the hill she decided to die on is a stupid fucking hill. Mm-hmm. But here's the other thing is when she first became a billionaire, and she did probably 10 years ago or whatever, she donated enough millions to make her not a billionaire. She was like, I don't want to be a billionaire.
Yeah, yeah.
And now she's a billionaire again because it turns out the money's still coming in.
Yeah.
Like it's not.
People are still buying Harry Potter. Yeah.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, quite honestly, if Jeff Bezos gave away, he's worth something like $900 billion or close. He might be the first trillionaire or something like that. Like if he gave away all of it, like if he kept a dollar, he would be a billionaire by the end of next year. It would be fine. And so it's just dumb. But I hope that one day that I will walk away after, because right now I make thousands of dollars. Well, when I work, not right now, but like when I look at like my, like how much money I'm making now, I'm like, I feel fabulously wealthy. Like I bought a pair of shoes the other day over the internet that I didn't even, I was like, they may not even fit. I'm buying them. And they were like $70. That feels super wealthy to me.
When you're around super rich people, if you've experienced enough of them in New York, that you're just like, they're not there's no way that you can know it until you like live it. But it's like, truly, if you're provided for, you have like,
yeah, there's so many, there's,
that's a good outlook.
A little gratitude.
Just enough to be able to buy some shoes that you haven't tried on. I think that's the level of wealth that everyone
I live indoors.
To. Yeah.
I have food. I have a car with gas in it. These are all very, you know, I'm covered. I think month to month I've probably got 6 months and, you know, and I'm grinding it out right now because it's COVID and I'm like, I'm working my ass off to make $300 $200 or $300 a week doing Zoom shows.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, just something coming in, So I'm not, you know, it's not all going out and I'm fine. But I remember when we first went into lockdown in March, I bought like 10 pounds of rice, 10 pounds of beans. The rice, moths got into it. I had to throw away fucking 5 pounds of rice. I was so mad. Anyway, I've digressed completely off of Tom Waits.
No.
We're at an hour, but what would you, will you make me a nice mix of Tom Waits? It doesn't have to be the covers.
Yeah, no, I'll make you a playlist of Tom Waits and I will find a nice.
Eight songs.
And I have, I'll find like a short little interview with them that maybe you'll find fascinating. Yeah.
Oh, that
just a short.
That you talked to Tom. What you talked to Tom? Waits?
No. Just an interview. Of an article.
I was like, holy smokes. Yeah.
Talk about burying the lead. No.
Exactly. Here we are. I love to find that.
Like, I'll tell you about it next time. It wasn't as cool as I thought it'd be. It was just like he's. I was like, come on, man. It totally don't meet your heroes, okay? His breath smelled. No, I'm kidding. No.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, so Kevin James Doyle, don't turn off your recording device. I would like to thank you for being on the Dork Forest. This was fascinating, and I look forward to getting I didn't feel as bad about not knowing who he was as I have with other musical heroes.
Thanks. I hope it was fascinating and not
yeah.
You know, I hope if one little if I'm excited for you to hear the playlist. That's what I'm excited for.
Yeah. Me too. So Kevin James Doyle at Kevin James Doyle at all the places. 30-Year-Old Virgin is the name of the album, and the Bradshaw Boys is the name of the podcast. Thank you for doing the show, and Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?